Captain Skyhawk, soar where no man has gone before. And welcome to Nostalgia, a chronological exploration of every NES game released in North America. I'm Mike.
And I'm Sean.
That's it for today, but that's okay because we have a topic right off the bat here. Captain Skyhawk, soar where no man has gone before. That's the back of the box. Mm-hmm. Is that a good claim for a video game when most video games also take place where likely no man has gone before?
I like to think, and I think this is just, you know, how I was seeing things as a kid, like, to any particular video game, all other video games don't really matter. You know, like to them, they're the only ones around. They're the only game in town. Or at least their marketing department thinks so. You know what I mean? Like, of course it would be the place that no man has gone before. If you're going to space, no one's gone to space before.
Right, and that's a great claim to make if you work for NASA's recruiting department and you're trying to get, like, you know, kids or college students, like, interested in, yeah, I want to go where no man's gone before. But in a video game, I mean, like, you know, how many shmups do we play that take place in space? Like, I feel like I've been here.
But have we been here at in this perspective?
Right. And with this particular plane, in this particular vector, in this particular neck of the woods, localized entirely in your bedroom or living room, depending on where you had the console. Where did you keep your consoles?
Oh, they were in the living room. I didn't have a TV in my room until I was like a teenager.
Interesting. Okay, yeah, because I think we were a basement video game group people. Like, our living room was really, it had a TV in it as well, but I guess my dad would have thought, like,
oh, I see,
that's
what
for him to watch TV,
yes,
you know?
Yes. Like, okay, so hold on. Early childhood, you know, when we had the Super NES, that was in the living room. Later childhood, that's when they kicked us down underground. So, yes,
right,
both.
Yeah. Get out of my way. Exactly. Okay. In Captain Skyhawk, which is not like an IP, by the way. Captain Skyhawk isn't like some cartoon or some recognizable comic book character. This is just the name of the game. And Captain Skyhawk is, I guess, like a person piloting the vehicle, not
you
like
never
the
see.
Name of the plane. Yeah, you never see this person. I guess Captain Skyhawk is that guy on the front cover of the box who looks like Randy Quaid from Independence Day saying, like, you know, hello, boys, I'm back. Like, it's like, it has like that same expression. So that's what I'm picturing in my head.
Do we think that Independence Day sort of took liberties with IP from whoever designed this game?
Okay, so think about it, Sean. The plot for this game is that aliens have invaded Earth. And I mean, stop right there. That is the plot to Independence Day. So obviously they ripped off Captain Skyhawk. But it gets a little more interesting, okay? Aliens have invaded Earth. And they've built 4 land bases, okay? Like, if you want to get a kid hooked, you tell them that they've built land bases. Not, like, that they're probing people. Not that they plan to, like, disguise themselves as humans. No, they've built land bases. And these bases are designed to drain the Earth's energy and feed it to the mothership. If the mothership obtains enough energy, it will destroy the Earth with a massive laser blast. And I know we're talking about the plot of the game and everything, but I do have an issue with the way that's worded because it makes it seem like a video game mechanic that you will see throughout this
race against time.
Yeah, that is like, you know, there's an energy meter that like you basically need to be keeping track of, like whatever that thing in Mass Effect 3 was that you had to like always have in the back of
readiness.
Your head of, like, yeah, like what's my readiness?
Galactic
like
readiness, yeah.
Yeah, like, you know, I don't want to be able to monitor that stuff, so I'm glad they didn't do that, but it does sound like that based on the wording in the plot. So you, the player, must destroy the 4 enemy bases and then eventually go after the mothership itself. So basically Independence Day.
I think this would have been more okay and less of like a peeve of like, well, they're kind of, this sounds like the story was written in the manual, like completely separated from the game itself. But I think it would be less of a peeve if there was like, if there was a little bit of banter between these missions, because, like, it's not just go destroy the base, come back, refuel, go destroy the base, come back, refuel. Like, there's other stuff that you're doing, like picking up scientists and like resupplying other stuff on Earth. And if there was just like some characters that like there's a reason that this specific guy got kidnapped, I think it would make more sense. And then this whole like race against time, while it might not be mechanically important, would be like part of the story at least.
Yeah, and I think it does need just a little bit of Metal Gear style cutscenes,
exactly,
you know,
yeah.
Of just like just some extra world building here, because you do get different scenarios in the game and the objectives are read out on screen, but otherwise I don't know where we are on the Earth, where it'll, you know, like occasionally you'll see like a Sphinx in the desert and it's like, all right, they just don't have those everywhere, guys. Like, you know, like those were specifically placed.
The great, the specifically planned
by the aliens.
This is the great gridded plains of Egypt. You know that area of Egypt where everything's sort of gridded?
Yes, absolutely.
I think
yeah. Well, actually, that's what it looks like from far enough away. You know, like how, like, when you fly over rural America, it does look like, wow, so we just, like, marked off all the territory in squares, but really that's just how farming works?
It did take me a while to know that. Yeah, go ahead.
Say, it is not really a shmup. I don't want people to think that this game is a shmup like Gradius or any kind of horizontal or vertical shmup. This is more like a isometric shooter game, and then like suddenly becomes a Top Gun style fighter shooter game, you know, for specific scenarios. So to focus just on the isometric one, it's top down. But again, isometric, so you're kind of like at that 45 degree angle. Everything, as Sean hinted at, is like polygon-ish, or at least it has the implication of some 3D effect. So there is a altitude matters in a game where you're controlling a ship. And sometimes we've seen an altitude radar for games that take place in space, and it really doesn't really matter for much other than just making sure that you're lined up with the enemy. But in this game, you actually have to be concerned with lining up and also dodging terrain as you're going through. So I think like the actual environments themselves add some character, whereas in other non-isometric shmups, it's either just like, just don't run into other pixels, like other pixels bad. This is more like, well, you have to think about where you are on the plane. And I think that's a pretty cool, pretty cool way of handling a shooter.
There's a lot to unpack here. So one, I would say that this is a shmup, just with some quirks in how it presents itself and controls. And two, the amount of interaction that you're having with the actual landscape, like, yes, it does present some interesting decisions to make, but you could also just like not make any and just stay as high as you can, because otherwise this game is kind of hard to parse. I don't know how you felt when you were controlling this thing to start, and if maybe that experience changed as you were playing, but the whole like isometricness of this game does kind of it's the implementation feels very off at the, like when you first start playing it. Would you agree?
Yes, because there's two big issues, and I was trying to just be kind to the game and set it up, but there's two big issues, and that is the field of view in this isometric thing is very narrow, so you're only seeing, like, maybe enough, you're only registering enough to see, like, maybe two enemies and a specific hallway of your range at a time. And then the other problem is, so you're not seeing much, but the scroll speed is too fast for what you're able to see. And so you're just kind of dealing with things quickly, or as Sean's mentioning, just don't deal with them at all. Like, choose to just fire and take care of things if you can, but mostly just avoid, because you don't want to have to, you know, like, it'd be cool to fly through like little caves or little entryways and stuff like that. But not only do those not exist in this game, but that would just make it harder, because it's another thing to keep track of, whereas really it's just hard enough to keep track of where you, the enemies, and both of your projectiles are at any given time.
Yeah, and I couldn't really tell what changing your altitude actually did for you. Like, because I just kept pulling up on the D-pad, or I guess pushing down to pull up, and if I was just using my cannon, like, I could hit anything, whether it was sort of presenting itself as being on the ground or another, like, flying thing. Like, I was still hitting.
I wasn't too sure about that, but that is definitely true of the bases, which makes it really silly, right?
Like, yeah.
The bases should be the one where, like, it really does matter that you have to be low to the ground to take them on, because otherwise, and, you know, they can hit you too, so it doesn't really matter, but otherwise, what's the point of maneuvering, other than, of course, the fact that because the game is isometric, it puts on this whole, you know, as we've said on the show before, pseudo 3D aspect to the game that makes it all very cool, right? There is a presentationally cool thing about the way that this ship moves very fluidly and the altitude being convincing. Like, you can tell whether you're high above the ground or low to it, not just because of the shadow, but also just because of the way that the textures work on screen and everything. Like, it definitely sells.
Yeah.
Flying a ship better than, you know, better than any of the 2D shmups that we play.
Yeah, I'd give a hard agree there. Aside from the fact that, the only thing that you can really guarantee if you fly low to the ground is that you will probably crash into the ground, so you may as well not really interact with that system.
Is the goal ever as a plane to fly low to the ground, though?
You know, it could be cool if you can control it, but, you know, the way that the sort of the arteries of the field flow, sometimes it can be kind of a pain in the ass. But going with what you said of, like, how this kind of sells speed and flying better than most games that we've played so far, I think there's no better illustration of this than, I don't remember, I think this might be like the third level and then the sixth level, where you actually have another, like, ship, it's a plane. This is just like a stealth fighter or something. Another plane that you're sort of dogfighting against that's sort of traveling near the same speed, and it kind of feels like a chase that you'd see in a movie. And, like, the fact that you guys are kind of going neck and neck and you're chasing him down, like, that was probably, like, the most tense I've felt in, like, a shmup in terms of just, like, that presentational speed. That was really cool.
Yeah, I think that's the closest video games have gotten to feeling like Top Gun.
Yeah.
You know, like, felt... Right. And speaking of, there is a whole nother type of plane combat in this game that plays very much like the dogfighting that we saw in the Top Gun games, where, you know, your ship is just kind of always present in the... you know, in the front and center, it's you're facing, the camera's facing behind the plane, and then these other planes kind of fly in and ahead of you in their field of view. And the only thing I thought was weird about that, before we get into, like, whether that controlled any different than Top Gun, is that that's not really, like, the goal of other enemy planes, like, right? Like, other enemy planes should be shooting from behind you, too, and there's no system for that, you know? They just are always advancing in front of you just to become easy targets. And yeah, they shoot backwards, or at least some of them do, but it felt like an extra mini game because it was so inconsequential that, like, nobody is technically chasing you, you're just chasing everybody else. That, like, why is this happening? Why is the enemies so dumb?
Yeah, so I agree that this does feel kind of like an afterthought, though I would say that, again, it does look pretty, and it does feel like a good change of pace compared to, like, the standard game. But aside from... So, planes will approach from behind you and from in front of you, and aside from some that approach from behind you shooting missiles that are not really easy to dodge, but they're telegraphed well enough that unless you get really unlucky, you're not going to get hit by them. They're not really attacking you. They're just targets. I think it's just, like, sort of getting enough points to interact with the economy of the game and to switch it up a bit. So it's not perfect, but it's fun enough.
Yeah, and I think also that's my distinction of why I wouldn't just call this a shmup, because it has switching objectives, whereas shmups are almost always just get to the end of, survive to the end of the stage and kill probably a boss. This has specific scenarios such as you mentioned, you know, pick up the scientist, drop supplies into specific areas, drop zones, destroy the enemy planes, whether you're doing the dogfighting part or whether you're chasing them in the isometric parts. Like, it shifts enough what the goal is that, like, I hear what you're saying, sure, but, like, shmup as a genre versus, like, shmup as a trope might be, like, where this differentiates, right?
Okay.
Like,
yeah,
this doesn't
have
the tropes.
I'd say that it is, it's wearing a lot of the same clothes as a shmup.
Okay. The plane, codenamed the F-14 VTS, which is a fictional version of the F-14. What does the VTS stand for then? Like, why not just make it like the F-99 or something then? Like, you know, like go really high, pie in the sky ideas. The VTS, like, you got any ideas there?
It almost sounds like they're trying to do like a VTOL thing, because like you can't fight a base on the ground unless you can hover, right? So maybe they're trying to make it, they didn't know what the actual acronym was, so instead of VTOL, they did VTS, you know?
Yeah, and I'm sure that was covered in the manual as well. Actually, no, it wasn't. It just says VTS. It doesn't tell you what the VTS does.
That's pretty silly. Yeah,
that stinks. All right, so, you know, we talked about how the plane controls and everything, and it is weird to call this like a plane. Like, it's not a commercial airliner, but it definitely, like,
well, would you also call a, like, a jet fighter a ship?
Right. No, you're right. But I guess what I mean is like, it's kind of dull looking because I feel like it has to be based on the, you know, the power of the NES, right? Like, there's something about the fluid animation and the way this thing, like, it's just gray and it's just a couple different shades to communicate, like, you know, some depth on it. Otherwise, it's not like an impressive looking ship.
You know, you're right. But the vibe, especially of this, I don't even know what we're calling the bonus mode, I guess. The, you're just flying, there's no isometric stuff going on. You wouldn't know that you're fighting aliens, because it seems like they have the same sort of 1980s era technology that we have. So it at least is keeping things consistent. Visually.
Yes, you're right. In fact, Sean, I made note of that as well, that there is only supernatural things going on otherwise. Like, there's no alien notes. There's just, okay, they made the pyramids able to shoot fireballs. The Sphinx are able to fight back now. Like, is that something alien? Were those always aliens? Or
maybe
do they control those? Like, yeah, that's what I'm talking about. Going back to that idea of, like, they placed the Sphinxes. Like, this is like that War of the Worlds type stuff where, like, they were always underground.
They were buried
and then
there.
Yeah, but the machines were buried there, and now the aliens have come back. I would have appreciated more of that. Instead, what we're getting feels like, and this is a Rare game, we're getting, like, some recycled graphics from other Rare games.
This is a Rare
of
game?
The time. Yeah, it's a Rare game, believe it or not. Milton Bradley wants you to think that they made this game because it says concept by Milton Bradley. And, you know, I don't have a developer diary here, so who knows how much was shared. But usually when you're the publisher, that just means that you put forward the costs and the developer actually made everything that the game had to offer. So, you know, take it for what you will. But, yeah, I'm having a tough time buying into anything that the game is putting down, but I'm also having enough fun just controlling the F-14 and completing the objectives. Like, even the, what was really hard in Top Gun, landing the plane on the carrier, they have a similar thing here where you have to dock the F-14 into a space station, and thankfully, they don't make it like, okay, but if you crash the plane, it's game over.
There's
like,
no time limit. You can just sort of fiddle it in there.
Yeah, but again, it's just like, it's another thing that I'm just like, oh, wow, another change, you know? Like, not that the whole game always surprises you or anything. That would have been welcomed, of course, but it's not just like, all right, another shmup clone where all I'm doing is just the hook is that it's isometric. Like this game went well and beyond just a new graphics approach.
Yeah, absolutely. And like just that thing about surprises that you said, like they actually do keep doing that because, you know, you get into that flow, you get into that rhythm of like, okay, I'm going to do something in ISO space, then I'm going to do something in fly forward space, and I'm going to dock my plane, and I'm just going to keep doing that. I'm going to buy some more missiles, I'm going to buy some more bombs, and then finally after one of the last levels, you think you're just going back to the space station to dock, and now you've basically got the Omega to your Alpha, like another space station, but now you got to blow it up, and whether or not it's a satisfying end of the game after you blow it up is kind of beside the point. But the fact that like you kind of thought it was gonna end, it was gonna go this way, and then you're like, oh, it's another like boss. That was pretty cool. I like that.
But how interesting are the other objectives of the game? Like we were talking about picking up the scientist or dropping the supplies. It remains to be seen how, or at least we haven't commented yet on whether those things are actually fun or if they just provide something other than shoot all the enemies.
With the scientist one, it's really just a reskinned boss that which has like a little epilogue, if you want to call it that, because it's still like, oh, blow up these four things and then you beat the boss, but now blow up these four things and then go land and then pick up this little pixel dude. Whereas with the resupply missions that you kind of just the level will end once you sort of complete it in the field. There's no boss. It's really just like, can you time it right to get everything done? And get the level over quickly. So I wouldn't say that the different objectives in the ISO space are really all that interesting. It's just at least it's not the same thing over and over. You get at least some visual changing things up.
Between stages, there when you're shooting down those enemy planes in the Top Gun style dogfighting, those are rewarded with points, which basically points and translate into money in this economy to purchase weapons and ammo, new weapons and ammo, I should add, like better ammo than just the unlimited firepower that you have. You can never run out of ammo entirely, but you can buy better ammunition. Truly a capitalist society that we live in, where Earth is being threatened by aliens and we're still the only people who are, you know, like we are the only defense left and we still have to pay for the survival. So maybe it was all priced in. Maybe the alien invasions are already priced into the stock
invasion
market.
The invasion is priced in. I like that.
It might be because they feel comfortable charging us. So maybe actually maybe we're buying from the aliens for all we know. I get it from a systems thing. They should have just like, they should have rewarded you with alien tech for blowing up the aliens, right? Like, that would have... Obviously, they would have to also look like alien ships, to Sean's earlier point that, like, it doesn't feel like you're even fighting aliens. But I do think that this is a missed opportunity to be like, Earth's all in it together, except for these guys who make the ammunition. They don't care if we live or die, because I guess they'll have the ammunition.
I guess, like, if you can headcanon it away to just like, oh, we're going to, I'm just going to look at this as we picked up enough supplies to then convert it into missiles and bombs, and you're not being charged to resupply your own ship. Because, like, they're called credits, and I know that that is 100% just, you know, money, but it's abstracted enough away that you can sort of maybe your CEO isn't really trying to rip you off.
Yeah, it's like that's this universe's version of the MCU Tesseract stuff that just constantly just keeps being like, yep, we have more of this, not Tesseract, but the Kree stuff from the first Avengers film just continually just keeps showing up to be like, yep, we use this tech to make new weapons that created new supervillains.
Ah, yes.
You know, just always explaining it away. Like, yeah, remember that stuff from the first? It's like, yeah, we blew up those aliens and changed it into this stuff. So you have your regular canon. You have, I'll give them the cool names, the Phoenix Air Intercept Missiles, the Maverick Air-to-Ground Missiles, and the Hawk Bombs. And you can buy these, and they do come in limited supply. And they do also have fluctuating cost, not between levels, but just like, they don't all cost the same. So the missiles, the Intercept Missiles, then the Air-to-Ground Missiles, and the Hawk Bombs all have, you know, slightly scaling up cost.
And yeah, because one of them, when you're upgrading, when you're purchasing something for the cannon, you're not buying ammo for the cannon, you are upgrading the cannon. So you are getting a faster fire rate, and by the time that thing's fully upgraded, you can just hold the button down instead of, like, mashing it. And I thought that was cool, that there was both, like, long-term and short-term purchases, because then you end up having to, like, You'll have to actually restock your missiles and restock your bombs, but those cannon upgrades stay. That being said, I did find it kind of difficult to use all of these at on the actual field. Like I know that like directional input mattered, so I was able to get like the sort of Spitfire expanding projectile, and I was able to do like the cluster bomb that just sort of hits everything out there. But I don't think I was able to use the actual like missile at all.
Yeah, it's funny because it's not directional, even though it feels like it, because there are other things in the game that are directional. You can barrel roll in this game. You can do a barrel roll. you can with the weapons, though, it is about how it's pressed. So, for instance, the air-to-ground missiles, the manual describes it as just lightly tapping the B button instead of a hard press.
It really felt like I was okay. That makes sense.
No, yeah, you believed it, so it became what it was. But like the bombs, you have to press you have to hold and release the B button, right? So you have to do like a full push up and down on with your thumb. Whereas the air-to-ground missiles is like a quick tap, and obviously, like we know from all platformers that the NES can recognize the difference, which in itself is pretty novel. But we have not really seen this in many other kinds of games other than jump functionality, right? Like I don't think we've ever seen how you shoot is based on, or like even just switching what type of ammo you use is based on how you press the A and B.
Reminds me. And maybe this is an X thing, but did Mega Man have this?
No, Mega Man made it so that you switch with the select button, or it's the start button. I think it's the start button.
But when I'm thinking of Mega Man charging up his piece.
Oh, you're thinking of a Mega Man game we haven't played yet.
Okay.
The charge beam hasn't been introduced yet.
Damn. Okay. I feel like there was a game that did charge a shot. I just can't remember it, but you are right.
There are definitely games we've played with a charge shot. Maybe even, it's been a while, but obviously most Metroid games have that. I'm not sure if the first Metroid game had that or not. But yes, definitely there has been games with a charge shot.
Cool. I have vague memories of things sometimes.
On the sequels and spinoff side, no sequels for this game made by Rare. Is that surprising? Is that rare to see Rare not make a sequel?
It's surprising because I feel like this game is solid enough to warrant one. I mean, I imagine the sales must not have been there, or Milton Bradley holds the IP rights for just the name. but I mean, I guess it's kind of surprising.
It's also surprising just the Captain Skyhawk name, right? Like I think it feels kind of generic and throwaway, and that's also what might have surprised you from thinking like that this wouldn't be a Rare game, that they would have had like established an IP around their various games, and that Captain Skyhawk just feels like a game you would get from Tecmo or Victokai, not necessarily Rare.
But then again, like, Rare hasn't really been in Rare form, like, from the games that we've played. They kind of have been bounced between, like, shovelware and kind of interesting games, haven't they? So they don't, like, they're not really known for building, like, world building yet, right?
Yeah, you're right. No, they're just an established name. It's kind of funny that, you know, we think of them at, for their good games, of which there are five, but we have 21 skippets from Rare.
Yeah.
So that's a really bad ratio, and we should probably just stop talking about them in such high regard when Konami manages to have five essential games and eight play-its out of 24 total games. Like, that's much more impressive.
Oh, absolutely. Rare's trash.
Yeah, I'm never going to play Banjo-Kazooie again. Because it's a trash game. It's actually not, it's no Super Mario 64. I'm just going to say it.
Absolutely. I've never played it, but I have to take your word for it.
I don't think you've ever played Super Mario 64 either.
I've played, the first part.
Great, yeah, the first part. That sounds very confident for somebody who has played Super Mario 64. They always talk about the first part.
I did. I played the first part. I climbed up the
tree. No, I know, but that doesn't mean anything. You know what I mean?
I climb up the tree. I walk around the castle.
But you didn't even enter the castle. That's not the first part.
No. I walk in the castle. I jump into one of the paintings, and then I die.
Okay, that tracks. That sounds, you know what? You actually are more convincing than the aliens in this game. Are we sure the aliens just aren't Russia, Nintendo? What's going on? Why did you raised a great point early on this episode, and I haven't been able to shake that feeling. One other quick thing before we get to the essential games list, because we're due for it. But did you feel also, whether it was the dogfighting or the isometric, that things did blow up easier than in other shooting games we've had? And I don't mean that the game itself was easier. The game is hard because projectiles are always shooting at you and you have a narrow field of view and everything. But I was surprised at, like, I don't know if it has, like, lock-on technology or something, but I was doing better here than I ever was in, like, Top Gun.
So, okay, you mean in either of the categories or just the isometric?
I mean both, yeah.
Okay.
Like, I just feel like the spread on my projectiles was taking care of a lot of enemies.
Yeah, I think once you've upgraded your cannon, like, and I think once you've upgraded your cannon, you're doing pretty well, and I think also there might be a more generous hitbox in the isometric stages. Like, I think your projectiles are kind of coming out of the center of your mass instead of out of, like, the nose of the plane, because I would just be doing these sweeps and it would basically take care of the entire screen in some instances. So I think that definitely there, but I was actually in the, like, more behind camera sections, like the bonus stages, the more dogfighty ones, I guess. I would have a bit more trouble there because your aim is a bit more finicky. So I that one still felt challenging to get regular hits. But no, definitely felt easier just hitting stuff on the isometric area.
And we didn't mention this, but dropping the supply drops and picking up the scientists, those are done to build this neutron cannon that they're working on. You're dropping the supplies to give it to the scientist, and you're freeing the other scientists that I guess have been held captive. So the manual certainly does a lot of work here on, like, what the neutron cannon is, and that, like, you know, once you've freed all the scientists, your secret weapon is complete, and you'll be able to take on the alien space station, the mothership, right? But it doesn't pay off in game. It doesn't feel like, certainly, like that. That's a cool final power. If you remember in Terra Cresta, once you, like, collected all the pieces of your ship and everything, you actually turned into a phoenix,
yeah,
right? And that was really cool. And we said that was one of the coolest parts of that game. This doesn't necessarily do a lot of building up that, like, oh, neutron cannons, like, online, time to completely obliterate this thing. But even graphically, it just looks kind of the same.
It looks the same. You're just going up to the ship, and now you just, you know, you pop all the bulbs, and that means you win. And then you poke it in the eye after. You pop all the bulbs, you poke it in the eye, game over. The projectiles you're shooting look exactly the same as they do with normal fire. And the fact that there's so little buildup, it's just sort of giving you updates. It's just like a status update. Like, okay, we got half of it done. Like, oh, it's all done now. That's why I think that this needed more, you know, like, story beats. Like, put some cutscenes in there, like we were talking about. That would have sold it more, I think.
Well, there's nothing left to sell. We have to do the essential games list. I think, actually, Rare did something cool here with an isometric shooter game. They really, just like they did with RC Pro-Am and, they didn't make Marble Madness, but, like, Marble Madness also pulls it off. It's fun when these pseudo 3D games actually, like, still work today and they don't become, like, Atari 2600 style graphical messes where it's like, yeah, you just have to, like, use your imagination to understand what's going on. It's like, it's very clearly presented, and so that alone made this, like, a visually and honestly, like, a surprising entry in the shooter genre. Where I think the game falls flat and why it won't get my essential games list vote is because I think that the actual assignment, right, the actual, like, objectives aren't all that interesting, and it's just kind of creating, like, a workaround for why they couldn't just continue to make destroying the enemy bases and going through the levels more interesting. And so instead, the four enemy bases all just wind up being kind of the same level again with more or less enemies and different colored graphics, but they didn't change anything about that, and they disguised that by giving you other little objectives throughout to be like, okay, and that's how we'll break this up, rather than being like, no, the isometric part's what we're going to commit to, and we're going to continue to subvert expectations on, like, what, how that functions. You know, again, like, there would have been a use to the altitude to, like, soar under things, or, like, you know, almost like navigating an on-rails puzzle, you know, in a sense. Like, these are the kinds of things that I think I was expecting once I started to get familiar with the game, and once I realized what it was actually offering, it was just kind of giving me little time wasters. And so the actual game is impressive, and I think NES fans should check it out, but I don't think it's enough to recommend to a general audience, and so it won't be on my essential games list. Sean?
Yeah, this was tough because it was, like, while I was playing it, I was definitely debating, like, do I vote this essential? Because it's become very rare for me to have that thought even cross my mind. And it's sort of the same thing for me. I think that this game has a lot going for it, but of what it has going for it, it just doesn't happen very often. Like, the game is actually very short. And the moments that were the high points, and there are those, and when they are high, they are high. But they're just, you'll blink and you'll miss them. Like, when you're sort of in the isometric areas and you're fighting against other jets like you, and it kind of feels like a race or like something out of Spy Hunter maybe, and you're kind of jockeying for position, and then you're able to finally down him. Like, that felt really good, but it only happens, like, three times in the entire game. So like, yeah, the presentation's great. A lot of the stuff that you're doing is fun, but it feels like half of the game is here. So if they ever did make Captain Skyhawk 2, I'd have high hopes that that would be an essential game, but alas, it didn't happen. But this one is just a play it for me.
Next week, we'll be playing Castle of Dragon, not to be confused with the hit game show Castle or Dragon. Yeah, you know, that hit game show that you always catch on the Game Show Network at, like, 3 in the morning, Castle or Dragon, where the three contestants have to guess whether the thing behind the curtain is a castle, like from Transylvania, or a live dragon.
I don't think I ever caught that one.
Huh. We must not be watching the same game show network.
Yeah.
Also keep in mind that there are a lot of other things Nostalgia has to offer. So quick plug in for our Patreon, patreon.com/nostalgia. For just $1, you get access to the Discord. You can meet a bunch of people who might just be like you, or people that you can argue with online. Just kidding. We don't argue in the Discord. Everybody just tells us how wrong we specifically are on our Essential Games list. So if you want to get in on that fun, that's a dollar. And then for $5, you can get access to Nostalgia Bites,
which is our meal prep service where we will send you the ingredients of the food and you cook it at home. It's always farm fresh, always sourced locally, and it'll always be sort of like kind of tangy. I want all of the food to have sort of a tang to it, and that's what we do.
Yep, and all the meals come in little boxes shaped like castles and are made of real live dragons.
All white dragon meat.